This week's parsha is parshas this week's, well, actually not this week's parsha. The next parsha that we will be reading is parshas Vezayis HaBracha. We know this Shabbos is Yom Kippur. We're not laning Vezayis HaBracha. But eventually, when we get to Simchas Torah, the next parsha that we're going to be reading is this last parsha of the Torah, Vezayis HaBracha. So we're going to be on page 1112 in the Art Scroll. And we're going to start from Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Dalet, one line from the bottom of the Pesukim. Torah tziva lanu Moshe, the Torah that Moshe commanded us, Meirasha Kilas Yaakov is the heritage of the congregation of Yaakov. Famous pasuk, right? So Rashi says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Meirasha hi lekilas Yaakov is a heritage for the congregation of Yaakov, Achsenu avaloi na'azvena. And we shall, it's our heritage, and we shall not abandon it. Now, I want to share with you a question. The Gemara in Kedushin says that when a child gets old enough, when a boy gets old enough to speak, what is the first thing that a father teaches him to say? This pasuk, Torah tziva lanu Moshe Meirasha Kilas Yaakov. This is the pasuk that is taught. So I saw a question. This is not the first pasuk. This is not the first time in the Torah that the Torah has mentioned that Moshe gave us the Torah. You know, when we do Hagbah, we say Vezayis HaTorah Shasa Moshe Lefnei Bnei Yisrael Apiyashem Yad Moshe. This is the Torah that Moshe put before the Jewish people by the command of God, by the hand of Moshe. That's in the beginning of Devarim. So why do we wait? Why, if we're trying to seemingly instill it into a child about the Torah that Moshe gave us, why are we waiting for this pasuk? Why not use an earlier pasuk? What is unique about this pasuk that this is the pasuk that we teach the child? This is the pasuk that we're focusing on regarding Moshe giving us the Torah. So Rabbi Yochanan Zweig gives a very interesting explanation. And he starts off with another question. Another question is, as we know, we're going to be, when we conclude reading Vezayis HaBracha, Mitzibur, we're going to celebrate Simchas Torah. And we celebrate Simchas Torah as a separate day. You know, we have Shavuos, we celebrate the giving of the Torah, and our conclusion of the reading of the Torah, our rejoicing over the Torah, we do Shemini Atzeres. Why don't we do it on Shavuos also? Why not do it together on the same day that we celebrate the receiving of the Torah? Let's celebrate Simchas Torah. Let's celebrate the rejoicing over the Torah. Why is there a separate and special holiday for the rejoicing of the Torah outside of Shavuos? Okay. So he begins like this. The last four parashiyos of the Torah all took place on the last day of Moshe's life. And in Parashas Nitzavim, the Mefarshim speak out that the Jewish people entered into a bris, into a new covenant with Hashem. And what this new covenant brought to the Jewish people that they didn't have before was something called arvus. Kol Yisrael arevim ze lazeh. All Jews are responsible for one another. And what that means is that I am responsible to make sure that you observe your mitzvahs. You have an obligation to God to fulfill his mitzvahs. And we are all responsible to make sure that our fellow Jew fulfills their mitzvah. It's our responsibility to make sure that they'll fulfill it. So, for instance, there's a halacha that in many times by a mitzvah, if even though I already fulfilled the mitzvah, so I'm not obligated in the mitzvah anymore, but I can still be mitzi you. I can still make kiddush for you. I can still recite a mitzvah that will count as your mitzvah when you have the intent for that. Because I still have an obligation in this mitzvah in the sense of I have to make sure that I have the responsibility to make sure that you fulfill your mitzvah. And this is called arvus. This is called responsibility. And this is what came to the Jewish people in Parshas Nitzavim, shortly before Moshe died. The new bris, the new covenant, brought about this new obligation, this responsibility of arvus. Now, the word arvus is also used for a cosigner. If somebody borrows money, and they have a cosigner. The cosigner means what? That if the person who borrowed the money doesn't pay, so now I'm responsible, right? I'm an Ariv, I'm responsible, right? It's the same idea. The same way that if you don't pay, I'm responsible to pay. I'm responsible to make sure that you fulfill your obligation. So too, when it comes to mitzvahs, I am obligated to make sure that you fulfill your obligation to God. So the question is asked like this, getting back to that halacha about being a cosigner. So by being a cosigner, I now, if Reuven borrows money from Shimon, and I'm the cosigner for Reuven, if Reuven doesn't pay, I have to pay. Why? Because I made myself a cosigner. The question is, though, that in order for me to become obligated to you, there has to be some kind of consideration. You can't just say to a person, you can't just become obligated. I obligate myself to you. If it's not a vow, right, then from the point of just being an obligation, you know, it doesn't happen just because I say I'm obligating myself to you. There has to be some kind of consideration. Something has to be coming to me from you that therefore now, in return for what you give me, I become obligated. But something has to happen. Something has to be coming my way so that I will become obligated in this money. And the question is, what? What is it? I'm not getting any money here. I'm not borrowing any money. I'm just signing a paper. I'm just obligating myself to be a co-signer. How does that come into effect? So the Ritva explains that what happened, that the reason why what I am gaining, that now says I received something that now I become obligated to you, is the fact that you, the lender, are giving the loan because I'm the co-signer. That means you have confidence in me that if he doesn't pay up, I will pay up. And that's why you're giving the loan. So that shows that you have confidence in me. That gives me hana, that gives me pleasure. With that pleasure that I get from you, that you trust me, now I obligate myself to you. And that's how it works. That's the mechanics. It's not just poof, out of the sky, I obligate myself, or because I signed something, I obligate myself. There has to be something coming to me. Well, what's coming to me? What's coming to me, the hana, the pleasure that I get from you, from the fact that you trust me. And we know that hana, pleasure from someone, is worth money. You know, you could make kedushin on a woman with hana. So receiving pleasure from someone has value. If I receive pleasure from the lender, that he trusts me to be the co-signer, that now he's confident to give the loan, with that hana that I receive, I now obligate myself to you to be the co-signer. So now let's extend this concept, this idea, to the arvus, the responsibility to mitzvahs. As we said in Parashas Tzavim, when the Jewish people entered a new bris with the Ribbono Shel Olam, part of that new bris was arvus, responsibility. So I'm responsible to make sure that you fulfill your obligations to Hashem. What did I receive? What did the Jewish people at that point receive special anew that now they would now, so that now they get this new obligation to be responsible? They're like the co-signers. If they're like the co-signers, then they need to be receiving something to become obligated. This was a new obligation. That was an obligation before. It was an obligation that came at this point of time, in the last day of Moshe's life. So what did they receive new? What did they get, so to speak, from the Ribbono Shel Olam, that now they become obligated as co-signers? Rabbi Zweig answer is a very fascinating answer. We also know that in the last couple of parashas, I believe it was in Parashas Nitzavim also, right? Parashas Nitzavim, it says Loi Bashamayim hi. It's not in the heaven, and we know from the Gemara Loi Bashamayim means that it's going on the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu was saying Torah is not in the Shamayim, it's not in the heaven, and as we have discussed previously, what does it mean Torah is not in the heaven? That means that when it comes to questions in interpreting the Torah and deciding on the laws of the Torah, Shamayim can't make those decisions. The decisions of halacha, the decisions of how we apply the Torah to our lives, those decisions can only come from man. That was something where we had that Gemara Baba Metzia with Rebbe Lezer and the Chachamim. He said, let the tree show, let the water show, let the wall show, let the basco, let the heavenly voice come out. And what did Rabbi Yeshua say in the Gemara? Loi b'shamayim hi, it's not in the heaven. It's out of Hashem's jurisdiction, so to speak. He gave it over to us. That was loi b'shamayim hi. Therefore, says Rabbi Zweig, that's it. That's what we got on that day. The special thing that we got on that day was loy bashamayim. The fact that now we are given the complete control over how we establish the laws of the Torah, the fact that that happened that day, that's what we received. Because as he points out, until now, whenever there was some kind of a question, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do when he had a question? He went to the Rabbeinu Shalai, let me ask, he got an answer. So before, it was still Bashamayim. The Rabbeinu Shalom was still deciding and still answering questions, still deciding. But once Moshe Rabbeinu said, Loi Bashamayim, he said, no, it's not in Shamayim. And now basically the Rabbeinu Shalom now gave us the power of interpreting the Torah out. And so to speak, he gave it completely to us. He can't do it anymore. That's what we gained. That's what he gave us. It was that gain of the jurisdiction over the Torah that he gave us on that day, that because of that which we received, we now obligated ourselves to become our raven and become responsible for one another. Okay, now, at Har Sinai, we find in many places that the Hashem giving us the Torah is compared to a wedding.
A what?
A wedding. Mm-hmm. A wedding between Hashem and the Jewish people. The chasen is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and the kal is Klal Yisrael. Okay? Now, on this pasuk we just read, Torah tziva lanu Moshe mayrasha kilas Yaakov. Torah, the Torah that Moshe taught us is a marasha, a heritage to the Jewish people. The Gemara says, take that word mayrasha and play around with it a little bit. And instead of the word mayrasha, read it as the word mi'urasa, from the word erusin, right? When we talk about a marriage, we have first kedushin, or the Gemara calls it also erusin, which is essentially where the woman becomes your wife. And then with chuppah, things are completed. But essentially, she really becomes your wife at the point of erusin, at that early stage. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded us the Torah. Mi'urasa kilas Yaakov. The Torah is betrothed. The Torah is married to the congregation of Yaakov. That is referring to this stage that we're talking about the fact that the Torah is married to us. The fact that now we have the total jurisdiction and control over the Torah. The Torah is married to us. So what lies in this pasuk of Torah Tzivalenu Moshe, Mayrasha Kilas Yaakov, is this new concept that came about this day, on the last day of Moshe's life, that the Jewish people became co-signers to one another. Why? Because they received the total jurisdiction over the Torah. That is what's being referred to here in these words, Mayrasha Kilas Yaakov, which we translate as heritage, but it also is supposed to be read as Mi'urasa, betrothed, married. And therefore, and that's referring to this idea, the Torah is married to us. We have control over the Torah now. Of course, we have control over the Torah. We have to interpret it according to the way Hashem gave us the means to interpret it. We can't just, it's not a free-for-all to interpret the way we want. We received from the Rabbeinu Shem how to interpret the Torah. But at the end of the day, it's now, it can only now be interpreted and the law is established only based on what human intellect can understand, what the Torah sages can understand. So therefore, as Rabbi Zweig, the reason why we pick this mitzvah to teach to our children is because of this idea that we're now teaching to our children the second stage of the Torah, the new stage, the relationship of Torah that we now have with the Torah. We now have a relationship with the Torah that it's, so to speak, it's married to us. We are the ones who have the jurisdiction over it. When Moshe gave us the Torah, and at that point of time, it was still Hashem's Torah, and at that point of time, Hashem is the chasen and we're the kala. But now, the Torah is married to us. That means we have the jurisdiction over it. It's now this this stage of our relationship with the Torah, which is the stage that we are in now, that is the stage, that is the pasuk that we now teach to our children. We teach to our children, we want to teach our children a pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah. We choose this pasuk because this pasuk is bringing out the relationship of Torah that we have now, the relationship of Murasa, the relationship that Torah is married to us. And therefore, Rabbi Zweig says, Simchas Torah is not on Shavuos, because the relationship of Shavuos was Hashem is the chasen and we're the kala. But now, on Simchas Torah, we actually celebrate the other stage. the stage over the fact that the Torah is now married to us, the fact that we have the jurisdiction over the Torah. We are the ones that can be the only ones that interpret and bring out the laws of the Torah. And it's that is what we're celebrating when we are rejoicing over Simchas Torah. And we read this parsha and we say this pasuk. And if you think about it, it feels very good, but the fact that we have a chasan Torah and a chasan Bereishis, right? We are the chasanim, right? We are the chasanim. We dance in front of the Torah, right? As a chasan dances for the kala. This is why Simchas Torah is on its own. Because Shavuos was the first stage of our relationship with Torah. Simchas Torah is that second stage. The second stage of where the Torah is married to us and we have the jurisdiction over it. Okay. Let's now skip to the end of the parsha. This is on page 1122, Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk Hey. Okay. Pasuk Hey. Vayama Shem Moshe Eved Hashem Be'eretz Moav Al Pi Hashem. And Moshe, the servant of God, died in the land of Moav. Vayikbar Yisoy Bagai Be'eretz Moav. Excuse me. And he buried him in the depression, in the land of Moav, Mul Beis Par, opposite the Beis Par. Who buried him? The Ribbono Shel Olam. V'lo yada ish es kavuras hayom hazeh. And no one knows his burial place up to this day. The Torah makes it its business to say, no one knows Moshe's burial place. So I saw a very interesting question here in the Sefer Ma'ana Shel Torah in the name of the Kehilas Yitzchak. Let's say the Torah would have left out those last words, and no man knows the burial place of Moshe, but it never mentioned his burial place. So basically, would anybody know where he's buried? No. Nobody know where he's buried.
Except the
no one would know where he's buried.
They have a shrine.
Oh, really? Yeah. No one would know where he's buried. So in essence, the Torah could have left out those words, and it would have been the same thing. Would have been the same thing, seemingly. You know, we know if we get it, we're getting our information from the Torah. So if the Torah doesn't tell us where he's buried, we wouldn't know. So why does the Torah have to say, and no one knows? Why is it important to say, and no one knows? So the Kehilas Yitzchak gives a very interesting answer. His answer is like this. He says, let's take a look at the life of Moshe. Moshe was a miracle worker. He did lots of wondrous things. And as the Torah says, until his very last day, he was young, he was vigorous, right? He was in perfect shape until the very end. A wondrous being. Now, imagine if that kind of wondrous person would have been amongst the nations of the world. Okay? And he dies, and no one knows where he's buried. So what are they going to start saying about him?
He never existed.
He never died.
He never died.
I mean, they're going to make a... They knew he existed. I mean, we're talking about the people of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point. The people of the time, right? All of a sudden, he had this wondrous guy. He dies, and nobody knows where he's buried. He's like, he disappeared. Oh, he disappeared. This is the stuff of legend. Mm-hmm. This is the tough... This is the stuff of saying, well, he probably didn't die. He must have just gone alive up to heaven. And go ahead and make him into a god of sorts. That's what could have very well happened when basically you've got this wondrous person who just disappears. Therefore, the Torah wants to stress, "V'lo yada ishas kvoros ha'erem azeh." The Torah is saying, let's make it clear here. He was buried, but nobody knows about it. At the same time, what the Torah also gains now is it shows the authenticity of the Torah. Because he also brings down, the Kehilas Yitzchak brings down, that There was once a great Rav, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz was one time asked by a Gentile nobleman. He asked like this, how could Moshe Rabbeinu write in the Torah something about himself that's impossible? Moshe Rabbeinu wrote in the Torah that for 40 days and 40 nights he didn't eat. No human being can do such a thing. So how could he write that when people are basically going to say, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're making it up? That was his question. Moshe Rabbeinu writes something that no human being possible can do, not eating or drinking 40 days, 40 nights. Anybody can go and say, what are you talking about? That's baloney. You can't do that. You're making this all up. So how does Moshe write that? So Rabbeinu Sinaibshit said to him, based on what we just said, that if Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah on his own and trying to make himself into some kind of wonder being, he had a great opportunity right now. Mm-hmm. Right now, at the end of the Torah, when he died, he could have had the best opportunity to turn himself into a god. He could have just died, right? Nobody would know where he's buried. And the stories that would have started coming would have been, you know, unbelievable. So basically, he was saying that the fact that the Torah stressed nobody knows his burial, which again, Moshe, I mean, if he was making this all up by himself, had much more to gain. Otherwise, is meant to show that this is not what's happening. Moshe Rabbeinu was not someone who's writing the Torah on his own and just trying to promote himself. Because if he was, he had a great chance to promote himself right here and then.
People come every day. Right?
And therefore, the point is that by writing this and by stressing the idea that although we can't find him, he is buried, that was meant that no one should ever make that kind of mistake. And also realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was not writing this Torah and making things up about himself to promote himself, because this would have been a great opportunity to do so. And the fact that it's not there shows that's not what the Torah is about. Okay, last thought for tonight I want to share with you is also again on this pasuk Hey, Vayamas Shemoshe Eved Hashem, and Moshe the servant of God died there. So I saw an interesting question. So the Torah is now Moshe Rabbeinu died, and the Torah now gives a title to Moshe. What's his title? Yeah, servant of God. Mm-hmm. Now, the question that I saw brought out was, you think that if it would have been called the beloved by Hashem, it would have had a little bit more oomph to it, you know? The beloved of Hashem, the Yedid, the close confidant of God, whatever it be. Don't you think it could have been another word, another description that would have maybe have brought greater honor to Moshe, that's calling him a servant? Mm-hmm. But the answer we know is very simple, is that the greatest title that any human being can have is that he's a servant of Hashem, because that's what life's all about. It's all about serving Hashem. So to be a servant of Hashem, that's the greatest title. And now, what is the servant of Hashem? What does those words mean? Servant of God. So I'm going to share with you that in Sefer Yeshua, in the very first pasuk in the book of Yeshua, Vayachrei Mois Moshe Eved Hashem, and it was after the death of Moshe, the servant of God, that God spoke to Yeshua. So on these words, Eved Hashem, the Radak says, Mi Shasam Kol Choykei VeKavanasei V'Chalash Kochayse B'Hashem Yisparach. And Eved Hashem is someone who puts his entire strength and intent and focus on the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'af bis askei b'nyanei ha'olam, and even when he's involved in worldly matters, miskavein la'avodas ha'kel yisparach, his intention is for the service of Hashem. The reason why he's doing all those material needs is not for himself, but so that he should be able to serve Hashem. Hu yikarei Eved Hashem. That is a person who gains the title of servant of Hashem. K'may Avraham Avdi, David Avdi. Like we find by Hashem calls Avraham my servant, David my servant. A servant, Avadai Hanavim. Hashem refers to the prophets as my servants. Shem K'may Ha'eved La'odem. They're like a slave to the master. A slave to the master, everything about the slave is he does everything for his master. From a halachic point, we say, Masha kana eved, kana rabbi. Whatever a slave acquires, he acquires it for his master. Everything a servant does is for his master. And that is what it means, a servant of Hashem. It means someone who is completely dedicated to the service of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Everything that he does, including worldly matters, is for serving the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And that is the greatest title you can receive, and that is the title that Moshe Rabbeinu received at his death. Eved Hashem, servant of Hashem. That is the greatest praise that can be given to any human being.